The clock is ticking in Iran. Are we on a countdown to restarting the war that began on the 28th of February? Remember, we first fought 40 some odd days of a high intensity conflict, and then we had a ceasefire, a pause, whatever you want to call it, all kinds of claimed reasons. But then we've been now for several weeks in this period of time, hoping to use that as an opportunity to find any way to have a negotiated settlement that would end the war. And now it appears that we may be back on the cusp of restarting it. But President Trump said this one here on this was yesterday. He said for Iran, the clock is ticking. They better get moving fast or there won't be anything left of them. Time is of the essence. There are some information coming out of the region today from a number of sources throughout the region. So whether Arab or Israeli, Iranian or American, the consensus is coming around. It feels like we may be within about 48 hours of restarting this thing. Several things have happened here in the last. Pakistan has issued a note. They're doing everything they can to try and get this resolved. They have reportedly, according to many sources, shuttling information back and forth between the United States and Iran, saying, okay, Iran is willing to do this thing here if they can get some sanctions relief up front instead of further back. On over the weekend, there were kind of dueling narratives. The United States said, here's our response to Iran. Here's what we're willing to do. And it was basically terms of surrender. Iran responded and said, oh, and by the way, here's our terms that we're willing to negotiate, and they were off the charts. They weren't even in the same screen because Iran was basically saying the same to the U.S. If you surrender to us and do everything that we're asking, then everything will be fine. And we'll be willing to have the strait open back up again. So it didn't seem to leave a lot of room. And now that today there's some diplomatic activity going on, there's some claims that people are willing to talk this and that, but everything feels like it's just kind of around the margins and around the edges, but no major breakthroughs. And, there's additional things this afternoon or this morning, rather, in our time this afternoon in the Middle Eastern time, where there were more reports that plane loads of American ammunition continue to come into the region, giving every indication that the primary objective and the primary thought process in the U.S. is that we're going to go back to conflict. Now, when you take a look at what the United States has said and what the position that President Trump has painted himself into, there's just not many options around it. We still have the only two most likely and really the only viable alternatives is either the walk away or the bombs away. It's really only one of those two. And unfortunately, with President Trump's rhetoric and the things he keeps saying, like that Truth Social from yesterday, make it increasingly difficult, if not impossible, to do the walk away. Because how can you make all those kind of claims and all this stuff about how they have to do all this stuff and put out this terms of that they have to essentially surrender and then walk away with none of those things being changed or done? I mean, you can say whatever you want, but it'll be self-evident to everybody. And I'm talking about the president's supporters that you did not win. No, whatever words you want to say, and it just won't fly. Even Trump has some limits on what he can say. And of course, as we always tell you, it always goes back to what's true on the ground. And people are going to recognize what's true on the ground. And I'm talking about President Trump's supporters. And we're going to talk about that a little bit here. In fact, let's just jump right into it. Over the weekend, this kind of gives you an idea of the additional difficulty that Trump has painted himself into with the people who were supporting him. We're going to start off with one of our favorite slash worst ones, and that is Lindsey Graham, who is talking here. Look, what he's going to show you here is just a real good indicative of how chaotic and disjointed we are at the strategic level. We don't even know what we want to accomplish here. It is a setup here for this question. Lindsey Graham was asked in one question about the recently completed visit to the summit in China with Xi Jinping. And they said, you know, how's this going to work out in relation to the war in Iran too? Because all these things are interconnected. And As you listen to him, notice, pay attention here, because he's going to start a couple of different lines of reasoning and then just start with the next words out of his mouth on a different one with no completion on the first one. And he's going to get to the end. You're going to hear him talking about Russia, India, China, and Iran in this one little soundbite here. And tell me if you find any connection between the three of them.
As to Russia, we're very close to sanctions being passed by the Congress that will allow the president to put tariffs and sanctions on the shadow fleet and any country that buys cheap Russian oil to prop up Putin that doesn't help Ukraine can be tariffed. He put a 25% tariff on India, President Trump did, for buying Russian oil. There'll come a moment here where China is going to have to be held accountable for what they're doing. And without China buying Iranian oil, their economy would collapse. So where are we with Iran? I think we've hit a wall when it comes to negotiations.
Okay, what do you mean there's going to have to come a day when China's going to have to be held accountable? Accountable for what? For doing what you do on a regular basis against Russia through the vehicle of Ukraine, like 50 times greater than anything that China is alleged to have done to help Iran? I mean, is that what you're talking about? Is that the held accountable? And what do you even mean? How are you going to hold them accountable? You just said previously that China was getting 90% of the oil that it buys that Iran sells goes to China. And what are you going to do? Are you going to stop that permanently and tell them there's a punishment? He's acting like, number one, China is a stepchild and you're a parent that's telling them what to do. And we're going to paddle them if they don't do the right thing, or we're going to take a ruler and we're going to whack their hands. China is a global superpower now, economic superpower and a military superpower. You're not going to do anything. And that was made manifestly evident by President Trump's visit down there, where he was treated almost like a child, a petulant child. I'm going to make you feel happy and I'm going to give you pomp and circumstances, little kids with waving banners and flags and stuff, and roll out the red carpet and nice dinner and say a few nice things and give you nothing. President Trump did not come and impose anything. He did not give any demands to China. He did not get anything, concessions from China. So that's just absurd right there. Then the second thing he mentions there is something about he's going to put sanctions on Russia. Do you remember that just back in March, 13th of March here, the U.S. was easing sanctions on Russian oil. And according to Scott Bessent, it was to bring stability into global energy markets. And now, here 2 months later, you want to bring in new sanctions to start, to unseat that, as the whole situation in Iran is getting even worse with the Strait of Hormuz and the global supply of oil. It just shows you that we have no idea what we want to do on any kind of strategic level. It's just scattershot. It's just, hey, let's figure something out today. I don't know. Let's throw this out and see what happens. I don't know. Anyway, we'll try no thought to, okay, if we try this and if we throw this out, what is going to be the expected response? And then what would be our counter response to that? And how will that affect? None of that happens. It is profoundly shocking to me. It shouldn't be, maybe, but it still is. It's still hard for me to get my mind wrapped around the paucity of strategic and intellectual rigor and capacity among the so-called elites in our country. And yet these are the guys that have President Trump's ears. Lindsey Graham is, of course, one of the main ones. We talk about him all the time. Jack Keane's another one. You're going to hear from him in a second. But we're not finished with Lindsey just yet, because the next thing he talks about is he's talking with a lot of arrogance here. Like, we're calling all the shots in Iran. And by the way, as he mentioned there at the end of that one, he thinks they've come to an end of negotiations. Well, yeah, if all you're doing is telling them that they're going to surrender, then there's not a lot of negotiating going down there. But I'm sorry, I interrupted. He continued.
The president's had it with moving the goalpost. You get a deal, the next day they wake up in the president's word, it's like we never had the conversation. So what happens next? I think we hit a wall on deal making. I would encourage the president to look at reducing Iran's military capability even further. They've been dramatically weakened, but they're still targets that could weaken them more militarily. And I would also keep the embargo on to weaken their economy. And I'd let the Iranians know, if you keep terrorizing the region, Karakalam, which is your source of revenue, will be in play. I think that would be the smart next play. You can't pursue a deal more than the people on the other side want a deal.
You can't, but he's not talking about a deal. He's talking about surrender. He's saying, here are our terms. You will comply or you will be destroyed. Friends, that is not negotiation. That is not a deal. When President Trump, when Lindsey Graham, when Jack Keane, and some of these others talk about they want a deal, they're lie. They're lying. They don't want a deal. A deal means that you have two sides come together and they have discussions, and then they both walk away with something that they can live with or something that can be ideally a win-win. That's not on the table here. That's not even on the table. There is only the, you see in the rest of his language, in his recommendations. I think that we should tell them we're going to destroy their oil revenue capacity and we need to treat their inner military capability some more. And you see that again, just like I talked about in the previous clip, where we're scatter shooting strategically. And nobody is rationally thinking about, if I take this action, what is going to be the counteraction? This is the premier problem with that I'm talking about, the example. You say, let's attrit their energy infrastructure a little bit and their military capacity, whether it's Kargil or military targets. What do you think Iran is going to do if you do that? What did they do in the first round? You're going to hear from an Iranian in a minute, and they'll answer that question for them. I don't have to answer it to you, but you can just imagine they're not going to sit passively by. So when you're talking about that, he's talking about it, and that's the problem. You can see in his mindset, you can even back this up and watch it again. He's talking like there won't be a response, like it's in a vacuum. Like our action here, I'm just going to take the current status that exists right now, and then I'm going to reduce their military capacity here while keeping all of ours here. And that'll cause them to change their decision and surrender to us and give us what we're demanding. But that's not how the world works. That's not how it's worked. It was in 2025. That's not how it worked in the first 40 days of this one. It's like, what in the hell is wrong with you people? There will be a strong response. And whatever you think this dynamic is right now, if you go in and start hitting this, and you will, if you strike this, you'll diminish it without question. And you can cause severe damage to their energy infrastructure, which will have long-lasting impacts on Iran. That's a fact. But it's equally a fact, this side will also be severely damaged in the response. Iran has been unequivocal in what they have said and what they have done, and they have lined up in this area. And you dare not ignore that. But we are, and again, recall, this is a guy who's in President Trump's ear all the time. Well, there's another one that's in President Trump's ear all the time, too. And if Lindsey Graham is at least giving voice verbals to saying, hey, we want to have a negotiated settlement, Jack Keane doesn't.
I think President Trump has exercised an enormous amount of strategic patience here. He was given some indications that these guys were willing to make a deal, and he's given them 5+ weeks to come forward with something. And obviously what they were doing, their objective was, I think, to delay, not to make a deal. And the president has ran out of patience. I don't think there's any deal to be made here. And the problem I've always had with the deal, even if the deal is perfect, what we do with any deal is we have to give them money to adhere to what they want in the deal. They want their frozen assets to be given to them. That's $100 billion. They want sanctions removed. If we ever did that, what are we really doing? The regime not only survives, but we wind up financing their recovery.
So Jack Keane's been talking this since before the war started. You may recall he says no deal, no negotiations, because we can't have a perfect deal even that leaves them in power, according to him, because they can't exist. He can't have a negotiated deal because they can't exist. Now, you know, the classic thing about, you know, you got a Satan on this shoulder and you got an angel on this shoulder, and you're, you know, the guy in the middle is trying to decide, well, you know, who to listen to. This one is worse. This is with President Trump. You have Lindsey Graham on one shoulder and you have Jack Keane on another shoulder. And of course, Mark Levin and Keith Kellogg and all these other guys just around in a little aura. And I'm sure that there are some. The Atlantic has reported there are some others in the room, but these are the guys that are constantly in his ear. And then when we see this Truth Social that he posted, that the clock is ticking and that they have to do something here, implies that he's listening to these guys. Now, I said, not in India, not in Iran, not in Moscow, none of these places. Every action has a counteraction. It always does, and this one will too. And over the weekend, Professor Mirandu was on with our good friend from Dialogue Works, And he explained, if we restart, what he believes the uranium reaction will be this time.
My understanding is that if this time round, escalation will go up very fast. Iran will hit back very hard, but so will Yemen, and so will Iraq. Iraq has not shown the resistance in Iraq, has been very controlled. And the resistance in Yemen has more or less been quiet so far, because this side did not want to make this a regional war of complete destruction. Iran allowed Saudi Arabia and allows Saudi Arabia to do its exports through the Red Sea. It doesn't allow the Emirates, right? It's hurting the Emirates more, because Emirates is a totally sinister regime. But Iran wants to give them a way out. But if war reignites, the Red Sea is gone. That oil is finished. And all exports from that area is finished too. That will be another 3.5-4 million barrels a day, plus whatever else they export from the Red Sea. That will be finished.
That would be catastrophic. Now, I'll already understand oil is over $100 a barrel right now. It should be a lot more than that if the fundamentals were actually play. A lot of the reason why it's still in that range is because of the release of the SPRs and other storage facilities. Those things are running out within a matter of weeks, some possibly even days. But we keep pushing this stuff out there to mask how serious the problem is right now. Now, you add something like this into it, whatever Jack Keane thinks, whatever Keith Kellogg thinks, whatever Lindsey Graham thinks, Mark Levin, and he was all over X all weekend just begging for war, begging President Trump to go back in and finish the job, all kinds of ways he's been putting that. He's been reposting everything. That's all these guys want to do, and they all think it's a zero-sum. It's not even a zero-sum situation. It's just our way, and there won't be a reaction. But if the Iranians, if that's not a bluff, if Iran does what he said that it would do, and brings the Red Sea into play, and closes off the Bab al-Mandab, and causes problems in that side, so that Saudi Arabia can't get oil out through its pipeline, nobody else can get it out there. UAE, none of these folks. On top of keeping everything locked up in the Strait of Hormuz. Like you said, there's another 3-4 million barrels. We're already sucking down about 12, lost every day, to include today, another day, which sucks down all the SPRs faster. Now, if you add another 3 to 4 on top of that, and then, of course, that's just in the near term, the blockage. But because this time it will be a physical constraint, it would take well into 2027 or years, once the war finally came to an end, years before you could get that back online. It would be years to get to the flow that we had on the 27th of February. That is how serious this is. That virtually guarantees a global depression and the wrecking of everything that we hold dear in life. This allegation, this nonsense, this complete fabrication that, well, they can't have a nuclear weapon. And even Trump has said a few times toward the end of last week, yeah, I'm not even concerned about the financial impact on Americans because I have to protect them. I have to do the right thing. The Iranians can't have a nuclear weapon. Iran didn't have a nuclear weapon. They have never had a nuclear weapon. Therefore, you saved us from a fictional character. There was nothing you saved us from. Therefore, in reality, all you have is that you have cost us profoundly already because of a myth and a fake. And look, again, Joe Kidd has put this out there, but it's self-evident for anyone willing to see. This whole operation, this madness, is all because Benjamin Netanyahu wanted it for his Greater Israel project, and we are funding it. And we are providing the allocations for it. And now that it's not just that the U.S. is shoveling out billions of dollars, friend, it's coming out of your pocket. This is coming out of your pocket. You are paying individually, personally, for this madness that never had anything to do. It is time, folks. It is time. Even big supporters of President Trump ignore madness. And now that it's all a lie, and you are the primary target of his deception, He is manipulating all Americans, anyone who's willing to listen to him, by this claim, this mockery of any kind of version of justice, that he took this hard action because he's brave and it was for you. And it wasn't. It was never for you. And yeah, I'm glad you're showing this stuff, Gary. This is stuff over the week. And you talk about deception. Is this something you can scroll through, Gary? There's just tons of these things where he's putting himself in all of these pictures and imagining himself as a really brave person and blowing up all this stuff like we have unlimited power. On top of these comments that you've seen, this kind of stuff is just nonsensical. This is like a kid in high school who got hold of a social media account and is posting stuff. This is totally detached from reality. That's not how it works, because for every picture that may exist in reality that he's showing there, there's another one on the other side coming back here, which they have already validated and demonstrated their capacity. We dare not get into a situation to where we prove again in this final way the reality that we don't have the combat capability to force open the Strait of Hormuz and to compel submission, surrender to the Iranian side. It just doesn't exist. And all of these things are known. All these things are out there. And everybody on the Iranian side is well aware of the pain and the power of the United States. They don't underestimate it. They realize that if this gets kicked back on, they are going to suffer tremendously. Their eyes are wide open on this. Obviously, it's been manifested on their soil. So they know it's true. If Trump goes back to this, they know it's no small thing. But you see this morning, this is just hours ago, President Pezeshkian of Iran has said, we will never bow our heads to any power under any circumstances. We will engage in dialogue with dignity, the importance of truthful storytelling. In his view, lying is the worst sin. The role of the public relations, explaining energy conservation, et cetera. This is actually translated from the person. This was to their own people. This was not primarily forward-facing to American public, but it certainly is being read that way, obviously, as you see in this translation here. But he's talking about here the importance of unity. He's saying, listen, something bad's coming. We have something good to push out. From their perspective, they have power of their own. But he is saying, even if you do that, we are never giving in. So the stage is set right now. If these experts who have been looking in the region are right, and there's something about a 48-hour time window that's ticking down here, we have to hope and pray that somebody with some kind of leverage will get into the president and tell him, I'm begging him, do not do this. No bombs away. Walk away. That is still the best path for the United States. If you care about the American people, if you really care about the international economy, forget about the midterms. That's not even on the radar anymore. That should be the least of your concerns. We're talking about national survival of our economy now, way before November. And everything hinges on whether we restart this war or whether we walk away and limit the damage to what's already been done. You can't undo that. And the consequences and the ramifications are going to be going on probably for decades. We'll never go back to what it was on the 27th of February. We will long for the day when we can go back to the world that existed then, but we're not going to be able to. What we therefore have to do is make sure we don't add regret on top of that by doing something profoundly foolish and irreparably harmful to our country. That is the truth. We're going to continue to monitor this stuff. I'm obviously not in my studio. I'll be gone for a week or so. But there's so many things that are going on. It's so important. I just don't want to leave these things unaddressed here. And if anything does happen, even though I'm on a family vacation, we will stop and bring it to you live when it happens. Thanks very much, folks. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.
Don't forget to tell your friends, the ones that love to listen to podcasts. Get them to add Daniel Davis Deep Dive to their podcast list. They need to know what you know. They can get it to where they already get their podcast. You just got to tell them.